A good group this morning. Lovely to see you after a kind of quiet period following our Ongo. See everyone coming back with renewed energy. And I had planned to talk about our practice on the cushion today, but I was kind of yesterday. Someone came to me and started talking about kind of the political uproar that's going on these days and kind of the anger that she was feeling and the anger that other people were feeling, and they were sending emails back and forth. Just, you know, the national politics I'm talking about. Or am I talking about national politics? Or am I talking about the kind of residual anger that we all have that gets touched off by national politics? It's kind of like we have this readiness within us, and just touch that button and we're ready to go. So, in a way, I just decided instead today I would like to talk about a difficult subject. How do we live a balanced life in an unbalanced time, in a time when we are subject to so much input, so much angry, venomous input that triggers us and triggers kind of like not the best parts of our being at all? I'm sure many of you have experienced that in the last few weeks. How does our practice help us to maintain a certain amount of equanimity and still be effective citizens of the world that care about the people of the world? It's a tough thing, and obviously I'm not going to give you the answer today. But first of all, let me just read the first lines of the Faith Mind song. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. So how could this teaching help us in the midst of all the kind of political yelling and screaming that's going on outside of us and inside of us? Of course, we're always subject to the problems of translation. And the minute I say love and hate, those of you who are in favor of love say, well, this can't be true. And those of you who are in favor of hate, I like my righteous indignation and I'm going to cling to it. So the characters that are translated, love and hate, you could also translate it as grasping and rejection. You could look at it as the negative aspects of what we call love. When that kind of is there, or that kind of pushing away is there, when those are absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. So this was attributed to, you know, when I talk about Zen history, of course, we're talking about the story of Zen that we have inherited, making no historical claims to veracity. But this is the story of, this particular song of the Faith Mind is attributed to the third ancestor, Sengsan. And one of the things that distinguishes him, besides this beautiful verse that he wrote, was that he was a leper. And at that time, the 7th century, he lived in the 6th and 7th century, being a leper was being an untouchable. It was considered you had received some karmic payback from some previous horrendous deed in a previous lifetime or even in this lifetime. So it was, people were pushed away that were lepers. And yet he is the third ancestor of Zen. And supposedly, when he first met his teacher, Weiko, Weiko said, "You're suffering from leprosy. What could you want from me?" And Zeng San is supposed to have said, "Even if my body is sick, my heart-mind of a sick person is no different from the heart-mind of a well person. My heart-mind is no different from your heart-mind." So already he is, rather than responding in an angry way, he is reaching over and bridging Weiko. And then his famous enlightenment experience, I'm sure many of you are familiar with it because it sounds a lot like Weiko's with Bodhidharma. It's a kind of a variation on the theme in which Zeng San says, "My body is possessed by a mortal illness. I beg you, wipe away my sins." And Weiko says to Zeng San, "Well, bring me your sins and I'll wipe them away." And Zeng San sits in silence for a while. We don't know how long. Could be a day and night. Could be 5 years. We don't know. "Although I've looked for my sins, I cannot find them." In that case, I've thoroughly wiped them away. And then he says, "Live in accordance with the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha." So, of course, this story points to the quality of mind. When the mind is focused on sin, the mind is filled with sin. When the mind is looking for sin, the mind is focused on looking for sin. Looking. It's no longer in sin, it's in looking. When we're sitting in meditation, and we're sitting there and we're caught up in our thoughts and ideas, we're just caught up in our thoughts and ideas. That's what's going on. Our stories, our plans, the plots that exist in our life. And at some point, we realize that. And that is the only point where we have any choice, really. We have no choice when we're enmeshed in the plot, when Macbeth is sneaking up on us from behind. We have no. That's just what's going on. But the moment we become aware, that's when we have choice. Am I going to go back into this story? Am I going to now go into the other story about what a bad meditator I am? And any of a series of, and I know we all have 4 or 5 special choices we like to do at that decision point. What he liked to do at that decision point was to open his mind completely and let it all go. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preference. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. When we drop away all our preferences and we just sit, it's not so hard. So these days, what would it be like to have no preferences, to have no pro or no con, to give ourselves to the present moment? to the present moment in this country when people are making up their minds about what person they're going to vote for. I think those of us who care about the peoples of the world take this very seriously. And yet, it is so easy for us to lose any sense of wholeness or continuity at this time. So in my research last night, and was going online and looking at political ads, which I have been, we have actually in the Northeast, I guess everybody just assumes that this state is going to vote one particular way, so we don't see all the ads that are going on around the country, the electronic ads, the video ads, and so forth, and they're really appalling. It's amazing. The low level of intelligence that is being spoken to. I mean, that's all I'm going to say about that now. Don't let me go any further, but oh my God. what is it about? You know, it's these images and phrases are designed to frighten us, to stimulate in us the kind of inchoate anger and dissatisfaction and fear that exist within us. So that they're not really kind of like intelligent arguments about policy. But they're just ways, phrases, words, and images that are designed to excite our anger. To get us to flame up. It's like we have these qualities within us, and they're kind of like these embers that burn below the surface. And these are like winds that come to kind of like flame up. And I think we may know in some part of our minds that this is what's happening. And yet, you know, anger feels good. It actually physically, you know, when you have that feeling come over you, it's kind of like it's enlivening. It's not such a dead thing. It's like, and so, in a way, kind of just naturally, the body and the mind kind of want to be incited. We want to be flamed up. You know, I'm talking about politics, but this is even more obvious and true to you in your ordinary daily life. When you get angry with someone you know, someone close to you, and you begin to make up a story. Let me just not say you begin to make up the story. Let me say I began to make up a story about something that's happened, and knowing full well that it's not, that I have no referent in truth or fact. And yet the story is so seductive and it stokes the flames of anger that it's very easy to just continue to go along with it. And of course, since we are all so inarticulate, if we thrust that forward to someone we're angry with, they're going to do the same thing, and then so there's no communication possible at all. There's merely these flames shooting back and forth. But the problem with political anger is that we imbue it with a kind of righteousness. It's not just that I'm angry, but I am angry for all beings everywhere. And I am right. And I am correct. So therefore, it's okay for me to engage in hate speech. Therefore, it's okay for me to be spiteful and maybe exaggerate to the point that truth is lost, facts are lost, and yet I'm feeling better and better the more I get worked up on this. The Faith Mind scripture says, make the smallest distinction and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinions for or against anything. To set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. When the deep meaning of things is not understood, the mind's essential peace is disturbed to no avail. If you wish to see the truth, hold no opinions for or against anything. What I think is useful for us to realize is this is urging us to come from a space of mental freedom. Come from a space where we are not going down hell-bent on those old paths that we always go down. The same rhetoric. The same words. We rehearse them over and over. When I saw an unnamed person on a video on my computer, I heard myself saying the same things I said in 1963 in Berkeley. Using the same phrases. Talk about a well-worn path. Nothing new here. I know what's right and what's wrong. How can I responsibly and with wisdom discern anything when I am reacting to what very skillful media magicians are offering me? Creators of these emotional ads, the creators of, even the op-ed section of the Times, which of course you know is ultra-left. Even the op-ed section of the Times, you can read those and you feel yourself, your heart rate goes up a little bit, you know, and you're being manipulated again. So easy for us to fall into that. So I think what Sengsan is saying, he's not saying go around like stupid person. He's saying the holding of no opinions is an attitude, a precious attitude that we forget about, a posture towards the world that is curious, a posture that is interested and has attention. Not one that knows already. Also in our lives, when there are misunderstandings, to have that posture. I know what she means by that. You don't know. I don't know. Why not ask? Why not check it out? How can we study? ourselves in relation to what's going on. So, for example, perhaps you have seen Sarah Palin give a talk or a speech or an interview recently. Read some quote that she's written. It would be an interesting exercise for you to just listen. And when you experience a reaction, just stop. Notice what the trigger word was or expression. Just notice what triggered this. Notice your feelings. Use it to study yourself. What value or need in you is being threatened? It's very important work. It lifts it to a whole other level than some ad hominem attack that might rise up from your consciousness. So, I'm suggesting that instead of condemning and hating and rejecting someone who represents a different point of view, that I try to consider what need or value is that person expressing that they are hoping that what they're saying is going to further. Is it possible that there might be some relationship between the needs and values of this person and my needs and values? This can only be done if we have the courage and the strength to let go of our fixed ideas. To not set up what we like and what we dislike, but instead exercise compassionate listening. How many difficulties in our lives, with our partners, in business, our relations with others, how different they would be if we were able to engage on that level of compassionate listening. To see that actually we do have very similar values, very similar needs. We may differ strongly on the methods that we would use to achieve those. But already the hatred is gone. The anger is gone. The vitriol is gone. And there's an opportunity to work skillfully in our relationship with others. Thingson says, "The way is perfect like vast space, where nothing is lacking and nothing is in excess. Indeed, it is due to our choosing to accept or reject that we do not see the true nature of things." Perhaps the most important thing is for us to find in ourselves a stable, quiet place from which to act, rather than acting from anger and hatred. It is due to our choosing to accept or reject that we do not see the true nature of things. We can let go of the intoxication of our beliefs. This is what happened. This is right. This is wrong. Then we can come to a place where we can trust our actions, that they will be compassionate, that they will be kind. Very different from an animal caught in a trap. An animal that's being poked at by sophisticated media connoisseurs. It requires that we pay attention with our bodies and our minds to what we are experiencing moment to moment. And then we find a way to communicate and express that. To be able to act skillfully and appropriately. Recently, I, under pressure from my students, I've tried to spell this out to you in a more clear outline of what I'm calling the five expressions of Zen practice. I'll be giving a workshop series on it soon. We have handouts for you. See stuff on the website. I'm always resistant to kind of organizing things, but it's very helpful to articulate what the Zen tradition points to in terms of aspects of a balanced mind. And at this time in our world, when the banks are failing and all our money is going down the trash, we read about in the paper, oh, all my money's gone. Interesting. And strange people are possibly being elected to office. It might be good to find ways to stabilize our minds. Number one, our practice of meditation to clear our minds. Do it every day. Come and do it together, because when we do it together, it's 10 times more powerful. And it reminds us of our connection to other beings. It reminds us of who we really are and is, in fact, the teaching. Study. Today I'm talking about studying yourself by using the political dialogue in this country to study yourself. To see how reactive we can be. How our, what we call in Zen, our animal nature arises so fast. I grew up, one of my stepfather's, his brother owned the bull ring in Tijuana, and so I grew up looking at bullfights, and so that's why I'm an imperfect teacher. Karmically, it's never going to work. But when I'm talking about this, in my own mind, what I'm seeing is the way the bullfighters would do this, you know. It didn't matter that the cape was red, but what mattered was to see that, and then the bull would go this way, and how the bulls would be taunted by this movement. And I see us as being taunted in the very same way by this this political world, and in every other aspect in our lives, by our partners or business colleagues. And you know how someone who just gets your goat, well, are they getting your goat, or are they just... That's how we study. We study the self in that way. And of course, we study using something like this 6th century song to give us insight into how to live a life. I encourage you to read the Song of the Faith Mind. It's very powerful. It's some 30 stanzas. It's very beautiful. And then we need to communicate, to express ourselves with one another, and, you know, journaling, finding a manner, another way to express yourself is so important, because you come to see who you are. Dance and music, many ways to express yourself, to communicate to others. And to act. This verse mind, this verse of the faith and mind is not saying don't act. It's saying don't act from some stuck place. That's all it's saying. And finally, to care. I think that to truly care is not something we can make ourselves do, but it is something that arises out of the first four. It is something that just naturally arises. We begin to care. Maybe we start out, we care about ourselves. Then we care a little bit about our little immediate family, and then our neighborhood, and gradually we begin to care about all beings. And we begin to be willing to steward, to take care of others. But not in this selfish kind of way of a fixed opinion. The faith mind scripture says, for the unified mind in accord with the way, all self-centered straining ceases. Doubts and irresolution vanish, and life in true faith is possible. With a single stroke, we are freed from bondage. Nothing clings to us, and we hold to nothing. That would be to be able to be truly free. And that's what I would hope for all of you. To be truly free. Don't be fools. Don't fall for all the foolishness that's around us now. We don't have to hate anyone. We only need to be true to ourselves, to experience what we're experiencing, to become wise, to learn from what's being thrown at us, and then to act appropriately and accordingly.